Are you ready for the Low Blows Network?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Yup to Tuck podcast. I am your host, as usual, Dom Tuck. Today, I present to you my newest guest. He is the motivational, the sensational. He is the savior of your destiny. He is Owen Richards. Owen, how are you doing?
Wow, what an introduction. You memorized all my thing as well. You've done your research.
I made that up.
I'm doing good. That was my ring introduction, word for word. I don't even know where you got that from. But yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just nearly done the lockdown now. Hopefully we're, like, what's it now? 8th of February recording this. So just staying positive for the next month. Like, not really up to
much. It's one of those things where I kind of put myself in the position where I'm not thinking too much about, like, before, during the first lockdown, I was like, right, maybe it'll be over by the summer. Maybe it'll be over by October. Maybe it'll be over Christmas. Yeah. Now I'm just like, it'll be over when it's over. And just wait. I'm not expecting it to be over by a certain time. And I think that's probably the right way to be about it, because even if things do start opening up, I don't want to be thinking about, especially from a wrestling point of view, when are we going to be training? When are we going to be doing shows? Because I just think it's... Because the expectations the last year have always been knocked down every time we thought we were going to get those things. COVID seems to get worse and worse.
Or anyway, I'm not. It gets taken away.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's not start on a negative point. we were talking there before recording just about the Royal Rumble, which I really liked. What do you think of the Royal Rumble?
Yeah, like,
I think. Go on.
Like, Reigns and Kevin Owens in particular, like, that was a really, really good match. And then, like, the Rumble matches, like, both of them were really, really solid. Like, the returns as well, and both of them, like, in the women's one, it was like Victoria came out and, like, everyone was looking forward to that. And then there were some surprises I completely forgot about until I got reminded of. Like, I forgot that the Hurricane came out. Like,
someone said to me that I think the Hurricane replaced Bobby Lashley at the last minute. He was just there with his gear, you know, like, always have your gear ready, kids. But I think it was the perfect Rumble, considering the circumstances, because Rumbles are always like, they're live shows, they're there for the reactions, like the reaction of Edge last year coming back, and the reaction of all the returns and stuff. When you can't do that in front of a live crowd, I think they structured it really well, and having Edge as a winner, because Edge was so beloved, and Edge is, he's so likable, and he told such a good story in that match that watching it was engaging, you know what I mean? And I think someone said to me, it was like, save somebody else winning for a year when there's a live crowd. Like, imagine Cesaro or Daniel Bryan or something won, and there was like 50,000 people there. Do you know what I mean? You'd rather that than you know, Cesaro's moment go in an empty arena. But going to Edge, I think, made a lot more sense.
And you have someone that they can actually claim as being like a winner from the number one spot, because, like, that hasn't happened since Benoit. So that was, what, 2004? Like,
And they kind of gloss over that with the numbers, when they always just mention Shawn Michaels. And then they kind of gloss over the Ben Watting, obviously, because they have to. But yeah, and I think they should only do it as a rarity, doing the whole number 1 to 30. I think number 2 to 30 has been done a few times, which is fine. But I think you should keep the number 1 as a special thing. But I was just thinking, I was looking on Twitter after the Rumble, and Liam Royal had tweeted, shout out to Liam Royal, that last year for the Rumble, he had avoided spoilers all day. It was like, didn't go online. He was working that day, and he was like, right, I'm going to go home. I'm going to watch the Rumble completely spoiler free. And he said he got to the bus stop on the way home, and some lad who's friends with him, doesn't even watch wrestling, went up and went, oh, did you hear Drew won the Rumble? And he was like, oh my God, just ruined straight away. And it made me think about, like, I'm sure everyone, including yourself, all have their, like, their own version of, like, that story where something was spoiled on you, especially with wrestling. Would it be on at, like, ridiculous o'clock, and, like, especially if you're in school or you're in work the next day, and you're always a reason why you might not stay up live and watch it. Well, I have my version. Right. So it was 2015, WrestleMania. So WrestleMania 31.
Class, man.
And I was class, man. Absolutely unbelievable. And at the time, I was working in HMV on Henry Street. So for years, I've... my whole career, pretty much until the last couple of years, I've always been working in record stores, always passionate about films and DVDs and games and wrestling as well. And I think that's all kind of ties in. And that's kind of where kind of my career started. I was just driven. Once I started working in retail, I was driven towards, because you're passionate about the products. Like, I mean, if you're interested in something, it's better than working in, like, you know, like, no offense, working in like a grocery store or working in like a shoe shop, like, I'm not passionate about those things. I was always passionate about music and films and all that kind of stuff. And at the time, like, wrestling was at its absolute peak. Like, it's like, I always find that wrestling goes up and down. It's always steadily good, but then there's times where it's like so, so good. Like, you know, like the Attitude Era or like the Hogan Era or any of that stuff. And this was that era because you were starting to establish all of these new stars, like Reigns and Rollins and Ambrose, and NXT was on fire. You had like Kevin Owens and Finn Balor, and like you'd nearly watch NXT over watching Raw or SmackDown. But this is a time period where like I would like watch the full Raw, the full SmackDown, the full NXT every single week because it was all unmissable.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're coming up to the WrestleMania show, and we were opening a new HMV store in Kilkenny. So, and we got a call saying they need a team of people to go to Kilkenny and help open this store, get everything ready. It just happened to be the weekend of WrestleMania. So we were due to go down on a Friday, and we weren't coming back until like the Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on when the store was ready. So we went down, and it was a great trip, like, because we got like, it was all expenses paid, we got food paid for, we got a hotel. And we just basically spent the whole time working, like, you know, kitting out the store, stocking the shelves, all that stuff, getting it ready. So I go down, it's like, all right, how am I going to avoid this WrestleMania spoilers the whole time I'm down there? So I was down there with two other lads that I worked with. One of them was this rocker dude that had no interest in wrestling whatsoever. I was like, great, sorted with him. He's not going to say anything, you know? And the other guy was this guy that was like, he was a bit of a wrestling fan, enough that he knew what was going on a week-to-week basis, but he wasn't like me watching Raw and SmackDown every week.
Right.
He knew enough about wrestling, but like he would probably just, yeah, he'd go onto Facebook or YouTube and you might watch a highlight of like who won a match or something like that. And that was enough for him. So I explained to him that I was avoiding the WrestleMania spoilers. I'm not going to go online. And he was like, Grant, that's fine. I won't spoil it. So I was like, I'm covered. So it got to like Tuesday, and he turns around to me and he was like, oh, I don't want to say anything, but it's definitely going to be worth it. Oh my God, it's going to be worth it. Just make sure you watch it. And I'm
that's
like,
the worst.
Why would you do that? Why would you do that? It's like, you know, did you ever see that episode of IT Crowd where like he finds out there's a twist in the movie? And it's like, I don't want to know there's a twist. I just want it to happen naturally. And it's like that. If someone tells you something amazing is going to happen, you're going to sit there watching it the whole time waiting for something amazing to happen, you know?
That's so that just annoyed me.
I'm like, shut up. I don't want to know. I don't know. Don't tell me. Go away. So like I shut him off. Got home, everything was fine, hadn't been online. So I invited my cousin over, who's a casual wrestling fan, enough that he wouldn't have got spoilers, but also like he didn't really care, but he would watch wrestling with me. Like if he came up to the house, I'd say, he's like, oh, what's going on in wrestling? And I'd show him a good match or a good segment or something like that. So he wanted to watch WrestleMania with me. So we came up, went up to my bedroom. I was living with my parents at the time, and we turned on the WWE Network. The WWE Network was very early days network at the time, so the network wasn't as reliable as it is now, I guess.
It's still not that reliable.
So, well, it's more reliable than it was then, let me tell you something. So we put it on, and I remember the very opening was like one of the commentators, like a ring announcer, like Lillian Garcia or something, going, singing America the Beautiful is so-and-so. That was the very first couple of seconds.
Right.
This is important. So the event starts, opening promo video. It started with the ladder match for the Intercontinental title, which Daniel Bryan won.
Yeah.
Great match, great moment. As far as WrestleMania cards go, I think it's a great way to start it because like, he obviously won a WrestleMania 30. He was still the massive fan favorite, only back from injury. Having him win the IC title in a ladder match, I just thought was the perfect way to start a WrestleMania. So right as soon as he has finished the match, the next match is about to start, the network just crashes, just stops working.
Right.
It kept skipping back to the very start,
okay,
but not without me even pressing anything. I was playing on my PS4, so it would just go back and it would be Lillian Garcia going here to sing America the Beautiful. I'm like, what the hell? And I would try and fast forward it, but it was then like they didn't have the chapters like they have now, so you couldn't even chapter through, or you had to like try and hard fast forward, but it didn't really work so well. So that happened like three or four times, and I was like, well, what's going on here? Like, I want this to work. So then I was like, maybe I'll just like illegally download it, like, when I know bad, but whatever. So I go onto my computer, I find a torrent for it. I'm like, well, I'll just download it, but my internet was really bad, so it was like saying it would take like 3 or 4 hours to download. Like, I don't have 3 or 4 hours, I can't sit here and wait, so we need to make this work. So I tried everything. I closed the application on the PS4, started it again. I signed out of the WWE Network, signed in again. I uninstalled the app and reinstalled the app again, and it still wouldn't work. And this is about 2 hours I was trying to get it to work, and eventually it just started running. I was like, right, it's fine. Well, all I could think was maybe, like, because the network was relatively new, it was just after WrestleMania, they had a high frequency of people using it, probably.
Yeah.
And the network was just crashing because the servers were just, you know, just getting lashed out of it.
Mm.
So it starts working. We get through a couple of the matches. I remember Rollins and Orton with that RKO. I remember, I think it was like Cena and Rusev. I can't remember the whole card, but we're about halfway through.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, it was, those matches were on it. So we're halfway through. We're loving it. It's great. Sting and Triple H was like, this is fine. It starts to play up again.
Ugh.
So it cuts back to the Lillian Garcia going, you know, and now the thing, America the Beautiful is, and honest to God, I think I heard that 20 times and I was going insane. So we fast forward back, rewinds back, fast forwards back, it skips back. Then it's playing for a couple of seconds. I'm like, right, it's working, it's working.
Okay.
Skips back to the start to Lillian Garcia, freezes, glitches like I've never seen before, skips right forward, and Seth Rollins is standing there holding the WWE title up in the air.
Oh.
And the WWE copyright logo is coming up, and it's like, he's did it, the cash in of the century. And I'm just looking at the screen, jaw dropped, going, oh my God. I'm so angry. Oh my God, I can't believe it.
Like that.
Probably one of the biggest wrestling moments in modern wrestling. One of the biggest moments ever. You'll never get that. You'll never get a cash in the main event of WrestleMania, probably ever again.
No. That's so funny.
Oh my God.
Like, that's my favorite live moment, I think. Like, moment that I've witnessed.
Well,
live.
It wasn't live for me, Pat.
Jesus Christ, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, no, that's just, oh man, it hurts. So when I saw Liam's tweet about Drew McIntyre, made me think of that. but with that kind of, like, the working at HMV thing kind of is something I wanted to bring up on this, because me working there, us talking now, me being a wrestler, it's all kind of tied into this one specific thing, which is when I worked in HMV, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah,
when I worked in HMV, I worked with your father, Anto. So shout out to Anto Nation and wherever he is. And we worked together. Anto obviously is a massive wrestling fan. I assume that's where you got the wrestling started with yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so he's obviously growing up watching pay-per-views, all that kind of stuff. So him and I obviously had that common connection, among other things, that we were mad into wrestling.
Yeah.
And so that was 2015. We continued to work together right up until the end of 2016. We, unfortunately, HMV closed for several times. I've closed 4 or 5 of these stores throughout my career. Very sad, unfortunately, being in a dying industry, you know. Nobody wants to buy CDs or DVDs or anything like that anymore.
Yeah.
Going into the streets, the streaming era and whatnot.
Mm.
But as we were coming up to the end of 2016, like, we were so into wrestling, even to the point that we would take our lunch breaks at the same time on like a Tuesday, and we would like watch the first hour of Raw while we're sitting there eating our lunch, like, you know, because we were like, we couldn't wait till we got home. We just wanted to see a little bit of Raw.
Mm.
But during this time period, Anto started to tell me that his son, you, had started to train to be a wrestler. And I was like, what? It's like, Irish wrestling, that's weird. And he's like, yeah, he's doing quite well, and blah, blah, blah. He's had a couple of matches. He had been to shows in Bray, in the old gym, seeing you wrestle in gym shows and all. I was like, that's mad. Like, your son's a wrestler, you know? And he was telling me about this wrestling school and Fight Factory and the links with, like, Finn Balor and all these people. And I was like, all right, this is crazy. But, like, I knew nothing about independent wrestling. Like, I was always...
Yeah.
A mainstream fan. I never really had any kind of insight into independent wrestling. No offense to any independent wrestler, but a lot of these guys got signed by WWE and I didn't even know who they were. Like, you know, like, I knew a guy that was going crazy when Rollins came up to NXT and then came up to Ting because he was in Ring of Honor. I had no idea who he was. I had, like, I had gone through that phase of maybe being obsessed with, like, the indies and all that back when I was really young. But now I just watched WWE. So I had no idea about any kind of independent wrestling.
Mm.
So as we get into the end of 2016, Anto tells me, he comes into work one day and he's like, oh, at the weekend, me and my wife went to see this Irish wrestling show, OTT. And I was like, oh, it's Irish wrestling. Like, what was it like? And the only thing I'd ever seen with OTT was, like, those posters for, like, the Father Head show.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was like, and I remember seeing the poster going, this looks a bit mad. Is that like, is it comedy wrestling? I didn't really know what it was. But I didn't, not that I didn't take it serious, but it's like, I just don't know what it is. And I didn't really have any kind of interest. And I was like, what was it like? And he was like, it was really good. Like, okay, this is serious stuff. Like, you have to come. And for months and months, he was like, you got to come to these wrestling shows. You have to come to these OTT shows. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, I was a WWE fan. I always just, I'd go to WWE live events or I'd watch WWE, but I didn't think outside of that ever.
I remember we went to WWE and the Tree Arena before you started training. I completely forgot about this, actually.
That was that year, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah, 2016. Like, before you started going to OTT.
Yeah, like, and it was like, that was, I think, the first time I met. And then we met again, actually, one of the Low Blows as well.
Oh, yeah.
In the Woolshed. We went to the one where, the one SummerSlam, the one where Balor beat Rollins.
Yeah.
We met at that as well, because we used to get tickets and go to all those shows as well.
Yeah, that was my first one.
Yeah, well, I started going to all of them. I went from the end of 2015 right up until just after they were in Buskers. I'd gone to a couple in Buskers, but we used to go to all of those events in the Woolshed, those Low Blow events. That's how I reconnected with Steve, actually.
Oh, yeah?
I went to one of the events, and we went to Survivor Series 2015 when Sheamus cashed in on Roman Reigns. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Remember that.
And the crowd went nuts when Sheamus cashed in. I was like, this is crazy. People in a pub cheering for wrestling. I've never seen this in my life.
Yeah.
So we started going to all those events, and I went to one of those events, and I saw Steve's name on a table that he had reserved, but he couldn't go for whatever reason. Right. And I knew Steve from years ago. Steve was like, he was friends with my cousin. So we would always meet at like my cousin's like birthday parties and, you know, kind of hung out together when we were teenagers and stuff like that. And we played games a lot together. That's kind of how the whole Nintembros thing came from. So I knew him a little bit, but I wasn't friends with him. So I texted him after one of those events and I was like, oh, Steve, are you a wrestling fan? He was really like, I know, it's like the whole like shame thing. He's like, I know you like wrestling. And he was like, oh, yeah, I love it. I was like, I saw your name on the thing in the Woolshed. He's like, yeah, I go to all of them. I couldn't go for whatever reason. And I was like, oh, cool. We should meet up at one of them. So, like, I think the next one, we, like, met at it. He had a group. I had my group. We were like, let's just put our groups together. So we all started going together. But there were random people that he had met in the Woolshed as well. And we were all just wrestling fans that loved wrestling that went to these shows. And we only went to the big ones. So, like, you know, the Big Four, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam. But like, they were great nights, and that's kind of how like me and Steve became friends. But then you went to one of those events as well.
Yeah.
And as this whole thing is happening, like, we're like obviously obsessed with wrestling, obsessed with WWE. Anto starts going to these OTT shows, just to go back to that.
Yeah.
And he was like, you have to come to one. I was like, right, I'll go. And the one I went to, the only reason I went to this particular show is because I knew one of the wrestlers that was on it. It was the British Invasion show with Zack Sabre Jr. Well, that was the very first OTT show I ever went to.
Yeah, what a show.
And what a show. And I was like, because I had no idea who any of these guys were. Like, Pete Dunne came out to wrestle Zach, and I was like, I don't know who this lad is. Like, I didn't know who, like, Jordan Devlin or Marty Scurll, any of these lads were that were on the show. Even, like, the Viking Raiders or whatever. What were they called before? War Machine?
War Machine, yeah. They wrestled the Kings on that, didn't they?
They wrestled the Kings to the North, and I had no idea who these lads were. These two giants that were like the most athletic lads I'd ever seen. And so I went to that show. It was my first ever OTT show, but I actually stood beside all of you guys, which is crazy now. A couple of years later, we all know each other so well.
Yeah.
And I watched that first OTT show, and I was like, I'm hooked. Absolutely hooked. This isn't what I was expecting. Like, the main event was a tag match, and I remember going and talking to one of my other wrestling friends. And talking to Steve, and I was like, I just saw the best wrestling match I've ever seen live. I was like, this is not like WWE. This is different.
Yeah.
And that's where the obsession kind of started, because then we just started going to all the OTT shows, and we became like super fans. Like, we were like trying to get tickets for, like, you know, in the Tivoli, they had the seats at the front that the tickets are really hard to get for.
Yeah. And then there's the stage as well.
There was a stage. We never got the stage, but we got the other seats, and we'd like wake up when the tickets go on sale and try and get seats, and we're sitting there. I remember like Keno Carroll and Linus and stuff. We're like sitting like amongst all those guys at all these OTT shows, and that's where it kind of triggered the whole interest then in getting involved in wrestling, because like Anto's in my ear the whole time, your dad saying, listen, you should go, like, you know, all these lads that are on these shows, like Sammy D and Be Cool and like Justy, like they're all in the Fight Factory, like. And I was like, wow, like Katie Harvey. I was like, no way. And I was like, you should go up. But it was actually him that organized it through you. So I think he had said to you, you probably don't even remember this, but he was like, oh, I spoke to him. He said it's okay if you, he said it to whoever, to Phil or whatever. It's all right if he has to go up on this particular day. And myself and Steve went up for a first training session, but we went up. We didn't even contact Fight Factory directly. We went up through you saying it was okay.
Yeah.
So basically, if it wasn't for working with your dad and for you, Dom Tuck, I wouldn't be a professional wrestler.
Wow. So he's responsible for me and you.
And you, yeah, your dad's responsible. Wrestling you, you and your dad are responsible for our wrestling career. There you go. Right. So put that in my WWE 24. What?
So before we actually go on to when you started training, you actually trained in Irish Whip Wrestling. So can you actually describe that to us? Because it was like, what was it, like 10 years before you trained in Fight Factory?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned this once on a podcast before, but like it was like quite a bad experience. So I'm not going to go into it too much. But it was 2006, just really showing my age here. And I obviously, like any of us, like the whole reason we're having this conversation, the whole reason that however many people are listening to this podcast right now, it's because, excuse me, it's because we're passionate about wrestling. We love wrestling. It's the whole reason why we're doing this. The only reason why we're wasting time talking to each other right now, you know? And like I was just obsessed with wrestling for years and years. And, you know, the idea of being a professional wrestler just didn't even exist in my brain. I just couldn't even think about actually stepping in and being a wrestler. It was just, it was like being like a Hollywood star or being like, you know, it was on that level of like, you can't do that. That's what like The Rock does. You know? I can't do what The Rock does. And so like, it was always in the back of my mind that like, I was passionate about it and I'd love to do it, but it was never realistic. And I actually worked with another guy in HMV at the time who had mentioned Irish Whip Wrestling.
Yeah.
So, and I'd heard a little bit about Sheamus. Now, Sheamus was champion at the time. And he was like head coach, I think. And I was like, well, like, I briefly knew about this place. I think I'd seen a little bit of their shows on like the wrestling channel. But I didn't know enough, like, and I didn't really know what Irish Whip was. I didn't even know if there was any other wrestling skills. I didn't know NWA Ireland or the Fight Factory or whatever it was called at the time existed, you know?
Yeah.
So, through this guy, I was like, well, Irish Whip, I'll check it out. So I looked up Irish Whip, found an email address for Simon Rochford, the promoter for Irish Whip, and I popped him an email. I said, hey, how's it going? I'd like to train to be a wrestler, blah, blah, blah. Never been so nervous typing an email, you know? And he got back to me. He was really nice. He's like, yeah, these are the days. We train this day and this day. These hours are for beginners. Pop up anytime. This is how much it is. And I was like, great. Excellent. I didn't go up then for another maybe 2 or 3 months because, to be honest, I was just afraid. And I think for anybody, I don't know whether you've trained once, whether you've been training for 10 years, everyone remembers that first step 100%. Into being, walking into a wrestling gym. It is so nerve-wracking. It is so intimidating because you just don't know what to think. You're just walking in to wrestling because the expectation is really high because you want to be a wrestler and it's something you're obsessed about, but you're also just really nervous. Like, do you remember walking in on your first day?
Yeah, I remember walking in and LJ was the first person that like went up to me and shook hands with me and stuff, and like I distinctly remember that interaction.
Yeah, how could you not, like, because like that was you probably like a bucket of nerves.
Yeah.
Jeez. How did you get in? Did you email the page or how did you find out about it?
This is actually a really funny story, but my mate from primary school, you'll remember him, Clayton Rooney.
Clayton Rooney, legend.
Yeah, I kind of lost touch with him. Like, I was friends with him over Facebook, but then I seen he started wrestling. So I messaged him saying, like, oh, where'd you train and stuff like that? And then, like, he told me to come down, and I was like, I don't know. But then I seen they were doing a beginner's thing. This was, like, 6 months after. And I just decided to come down. And, yeah, it's a funny story, similar enough to yours. Like if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be training.
But there's always a connection and there's always a way to get in there. But so like you understand, anyone listening to this that has ever trained to be a wrestler, whether it's once or a million times, that first training session is nerve-wracking. So it took me a long time to build up the courage to watch it. And actually, it was the week that Bret Hart DVD came out. I remember I was watching the special features on it. I don't know how I remember this. And it was like, showing training inside, like, the dungeon and all that with, like, Stu Hart and all. Like, and I was like, oh, my God. And I kind of felt a bit inspired, like, and I was like, right, I'm just going to go out. Training starting at whatever it was, 2 o'clock. I'm just going to go. I'm going to try.
Yeah.
So I drove out to Balldoyle to become a professional wrestler. Here we go. Like, you know, Hart is racing in the car driving up. So I lived in Sandyford at the time. So I had to drive from Sandyford all the way to Balldoyle, which is like 40 minutes, even on the M50.
Yeah.
So I find this place in like a, in industrialist, a kind of like a warehouse in the middle of nowhere. I go in, like, again, my heart is racing. And I went into the gym and there was about 6 or 7 people there. And they had already started training. So it's kind of like it is in the Fight Factory where you might have a 12 o'clock class and a 2 o'clock class. But it seemed like the 12 o'clock people were just training all day. It might have just been a small class or small day or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I turn up. First person I meet is Bingo Balance. And introduced himself. He's like, how's it going? Explained that I spoke to Simon and, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, grand. Signed up, paid the sign-up fee, whatever else it is. And he seemed really nice. So this guy that was coaching the guy, straight away I noticed he had an American accent. I was like, who's this guy? And I was like, oh, he must be the trainer. So he comes down and he introduces himself. And I wasn't going to name him, but I don't really care anymore, to be honest. It was a guy called CJ Summers, if anyone remembers him. To be honest, I've never heard of him before and I haven't heard of him afterwards. but this guy was some American guy that was like, you know, some big hotshot wrestler that was over to, you know, take training as a guest, but it wasn't just for one time. He was there for an extended period of time. I don't know if he was there for summer or whatever it is. I don't really know, like, to be honest.
Right.
So straight away he was like, oh, you want to be a wrestler? It's like, yeah, it's my first day. Now, before I tell the story, you know, I missed a vital part out where, like, at the time, I was quite a heavy guy. During that time, I was about 22 stone.
Right.
Which I don't really know what that is in pounds, but it's pretty goddamn heavy. Like, I was like 44 inches on the waist, triple XL shirts. I was obese. I was a fat guy, like, you know, really, really overweight. So, like, I probably wasn't very fit anyway.
Right.
So straight away he was like, got me doing drills. So, and I know now what he was doing. He was trying to blow me up. So, like, he got me to do, like, squats and burpees and jumping jacks and all this stuff that, like, you know, I could probably do now, probably barely break a sweat. But, like, when you're 22 stone, morbidly obese, like, that was really tough for me to do. So obviously I failed miserably, but he kept pushing me and kept pushing me and kept pushing me. And every time I was like getting to the point where I was like so exhausted, he was like saying, oh, do you want to be a wrestler? You want to be a wrestler? Come on, come on, come on. Push me, push me, push me. To the point where I was like, I'm going to puke.
Yeah.
So I ran into the bathroom and started getting sick in the toilet.
Right.
He follows me into the toilet, opens the door as I'm getting sick and starts like shouting at me as I'm getting sick in the toilet. He was like, this is what it takes to be a professional wrestler. You haven't got what a da 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 da. And getting right up in my face, calling everyone over to look at, yeah, pretty much build them up. And I was like, look at this, you know, overweight guy that hasn't got what it takes to be a professional wrestler. And I'm there puking, everyone's laughing at me. And I'm like, this is horrible.
Yeah. You
know? So I come back after puking. One of the lads actually, I remember one of the lads checking to see if I was all right. And I was like, I'm grand. And they started doing training. So they trained for about an hour. They did like drills and wrestling stuff. At the time, I didn't really understand because it was my first training session. I had no idea what was going on. But he just left me standing there. And then he was like, all right, it's time to take your bumps. Gets me into the ring and just basically showed me how to do a back bump and got me to take like maybe 10 or 20 bumps. First few ones I did myself. Then they got someone to get on all fours behind me and they were pushing me to take the bumps. So bump, right, bump, 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 bump. Now, again, like I was smashing my head, my neck, like, and like the first few times you do stuff like bumps, it's tough. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then after whatever it was, 10, 20 bumps, he just got me to get out of the ring and he was like, right, that's it. See if you come back next week. And I was like, whoa. I was like, okay. I was like, that's it. Like, wasn't shown a lockup, wasn't shown how to do a roll. Things now that I understand are like fundamentally so important to be a professional wrestler. None of that was shown. It was just like, let's blow up and gas this guy. Let's make him take a few bumps and see if he's, you know, strong enough to come back. And I get to a certain extent, the old school weed out the weak, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But that was wrong. That was like incredibly wrong. And like this guy, like I left there so deflated. And like, honestly, I was like, I my first thought was, I don't have what it takes to be a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
And I drove home, and I remember sitting with my parents, and my back was in bits, and my neck was in bits, and they were like, oh, and I was like, I just don't think I can do it. And my dad was like, maybe it's a bad idea. Like, wrestlers get hurt all the time. And he's like, he watched a little bit of wrestling growing up, so he sees people in wheelchairs and people getting hurt and all that, and he just thinks that straight away, you know?
Yeah.
And like, he doesn't realize how, like, it is, obviously it is very dangerous, but like, it is safe when everything is done correctly. Like, you know, you can be a professional wrestler and not end up in a wheelchair, you know? And but I was like, maybe I just don't have what it takes. And like, if you look back, like, that was 2006. I didn't start wrestling until early 2017.
Yeah.
So that one bad experience with a bad coach knocked 11 years off my wrestling career.
Yeah. There's a reason there's way more people training now, because it's way more accommodating now in like Fight Factory and all these other schools, like School of Irish Wrestling.
Yeah, well, and that's it. But like, even then, like, I told like this story to Justy a couple of years ago, and like the first thing he said to me was like, if you had a came to our school, you wouldn't have got treated like that.
Yeah.
And a credit to everyone else, and like, just you know, from an Irish Rip point of view, like, I've actually wrestled for Irish Rip recently, and within the last couple of years, I've met Simon Rochford. I don't remember anyone else that was there apart from Bam Catraz, who doesn't wrestle anymore, and Bingo Balance. And I've met Bingo Balance. I've wrestled Bingo Balance. Every single person in Irish Whip on that day and since then have treated me really well. It was just this one guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually looked him up afterwards, because like, I thought he was some big shot. And he basically looks like a really shit CM Punk. Like, if you...
of course he does.
If you go to, like, do you remember those days where, like, the old Carney wrestling shows where they have the fake Undertaker and the fake Kane and the fake Stone Cold? Well,
yeah.
CJ Stummers would be the fake CM Punk, you know?
Jesus.
But, sorry, this is turning into pure shoe. But, like, it just kind of shows that, like, especially with, like, a lot of the stuff that's gone on in wrestling over the last year, which obviously we're not going to talk about, but, like, it shows that not one bad person or not one bad experience should define everything.
Yeah.
If I had walked into the Fight Factory, like, as soon as I walked into the Fight Factory in 2017, my very first day, everyone was super accommodating. I remember we took a break. I remember walking across to the garage. I remember Debbie Keitel coming up to me and saying, all right, how are you getting on? It gets better. It'll get easier after a couple of weeks, blah, blah, blah. And like, little chats like that from people. Or the coaches just being so nice and so accommodating and making you feel so safe. And like, that's a credit to like everyone in Fight Factory, whether it's Phil, KE, you know, LJ, everyone in the School of Irish Wrestling, Joe, the lot. Even down in Phoenix, like, it's like you walk in now, if you walked into any of those schools right now on your first day, like I was 11 years ago, 11 years before I started wrestling, you would be treated the way I should have been treated. So I think that, like, if you have had a bad experience or you've dealt with a bad person, like, hopefully you can look past that and try and see that, like, especially in Irish wrestling, the majority of people, especially the people at high level, people that are running these schools are good people. Like, you know, I just kind of wish I had went to the right school. Like, you know,
could have been a lot different.
It could have been. But then again, maybe it wasn't, because I was thinking about this before. I would have went in and been trained by I don't know who and trained I don't know what way. But maybe by the time it got to 2016 and 2017, when independent wrestling was blowing up, I would have been around for so long that maybe I would have looked at it a different way. Maybe I would have been a different type of wrestler. I think me coming into wrestling a little bit older actually kind of helped me, because I felt like I was, well, not only was I like, I obviously lost the weight. I got really fit. I went into wrestling already in good shape. So therefore you have a bit more confidence. You can do the cardio stuff. You can do the drills. Like, because even if I went to Irish Rip and he treated me really nice, I probably still would have got sick. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I maybe not got sick, but I would have been blown up and had to sit out, like, you know? But, you know, so that helped going into a fitter, but also going into it just a little bit, I guess, mature, because, you know, I'd learned like a lot of life skills from work and friends and socializing. So like, I'm coming into this and you can deal with trying to figure out becoming a wrestler a little bit better, if that makes sense. Whether it's things like how you talk to your trainers and colleagues, and, you know, how you present yourself when you're at a wrestling show, or how you network into, like, you know, whether it is getting bookings or opportunities or anything like that. Because a lot of the time, like, use Phoenix as an example, like, I wasn't getting onto Phoenix shows, so I spent a year going down, doing every seminar in Phoenix, just to meet the guys, just to network, just to introduce myself. And I think having the confidence when you're a little bit older to do that has definitely helped me in my career. So I think losing those 10 years was bad because I don't have much time left now. But I think, you know, going in when I did was the right time because I went in the right attitude and the right fitness level.
Sweet. So just to go back to your first training session.
And that was the end of the podcast. It was about 10 hours.
Yeah, I was just about to say, just to go back to your first training session, you actually came with your real-life friend, Steve, like you were saying. I remember it was a Jordan Devlin seminar, and we were doing a deck of cards, and you just walked in, and you didn't look mortified, but I can tell you were just like, oh, shit. But what was it like being thrown into the deep end on your first day?
Well, that was, you know, Steve OG, fashionably late all the time. I went to pick up Steve, and he was late. Anyone that knows Steve OG, he always walks in conveniently 5 minutes after the warm-up is finished, even though he's the fittest and most jacked man in Irish wrestling.
He goes to the gym like 3 times a day.
Yeah, he conveniently misses the warm-up, you know, air quotes. it was pretty intimidating, like, because we had been obviously going to the OTT shows. We knew who Jordan was. And walking in halfway through a deck of cards. And also, it was packed. There was a bunch of wrestlers from the north down there as well. Everyone in Fight Factory, because like you get a type of thing where you'd have your base amount of people that go to wrestle or go to training every week, but then you're getting a lot of people going to a seminar. Like if we have a seminar in the Fight Factory, you'll get people from the north, from the School of Irish Wrestling, wanting to go if it's someone good. And obviously Jordan Devlin is a very good trainer. So it was absolutely packed. And I think in hindsight it was probably a bad idea going in first day to a Jordan Devlin seminar because I kind of felt like he gave us a lot of time. It being our first days, like he actually taught us how to bump and taught us some basic roles, but that's him taking 5 or 10 minutes to show people what to do on their first day instead of showing people that have been there for 5 years how to do really good. You're good. So I kind of like thinking about it afterwards, it's like, oh, maybe it was a bad idea, but it was a great first day to have because you got to see everyone was there. It was a packed crowd. It was a good atmosphere. And it's what I needed after the bad experience the first time.
Yeah.
Like I remember going home I remember going home and like talking to my mate about it, and I was like describing everything we did, and oh, we learned how to do this wrist lock, and we did this, and we were doing this role, and oh my god, and you know, and like a lot of these guys that were there are like obviously big wrestling names now, like Morden Hyper there, and you're there, and LJ Cleary's there, and Michael May and Valkyrie, but this is before like they all became stars, like, do you know what I mean? So like it wasn't like they were just kids that were good at wrestling, do you know what I mean?
Like this was right before Contenders, I remember. Like before that was even a thing.
It was a couple of months before Contenders, because I remember I'd been training in MSW a couple of times, and Joe was talking about Contenders coming up and stuff like that. And I remember sitting at Contenders with the other wrestlers, but I'd only been training a couple of months.
Yeah.
So I came in just as like OTT was like peaking as popularity wise, spreading out into Contenders.
The around that time, didn't they?
They had Omega in the stadium. We had already been training. So they had the Being the Elite, the one with Kenny Omega and stuff like that. They had that show. And I remember talking to some of the lads that we trained with at that show. So I'd been training a couple of months by that time.
Yeah.
And sure, by August, then we had our first match.
We'll get to that.
But that was it.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to bring up, because I don't think I've ever actually talked about this with anyone on the podcast before, but we lost our premises probably like a month or two after you started training, was it?
Mm-hmm.
So it was around March or April we lost the premises. So for like 2 or 3 months, we didn't have a premises. So we rented out this hall called the Wolf Tone and Bray. I know NWA Ireland used to run it for shows and stuff. And we had like the upstairs attic as well, which we had to use sometimes. And they were... Obviously, we had no ring, and it was the most intense like warm-ups we'd ever done. What was your experience like not having a ring for very early on in your training?
Well, I was thinking about like when we were in Bray, I probably only did less than 10 training sessions. Yeah. Probably wasn't in the ring that much, had a couple of training matches. So I hadn't got that much ring time. And then suddenly the gym's closed and we don't know what's happened. We're moving to this Wolf Town place. Didn't the School of Irish Wrestling run a show there last year or the year before?
They did, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, they ran a show there as well. And so Katie and Phil were like, oh, we're going, we're training up in this place. It's just up the road from the other gym. And there was the main hall, which you mentioned, which was big enough. Now, you put the mats down to the ground, but it was like a basketball thing. So it was like still quite a hard surface. And then the upstairs part was like this tiny little attic. Like you couldn't get someone up for a suplex in it. Like, you know? And it was so warm. I think that's why you said the warmth was so intense, because the room was, I remember like at the end of a warm up, people opening the windows, and it was just absolutely like, especially if it was a full training session.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because the concept of wrestling without a ring, I think when you start off, when you're so eager to like wrestle and be a wrestler, all you want to do is do stuff in the ring. So like if someone's like, oh, I want to do stuff, let's go and do chain on the ground, or let's try this on the ground, you're like, no, even though you do it, in the back of your mind, every wrestler's like, I want to be in the ring, you know? So I think taking that away from us, I think it actually made things better, because all the stuff we were focusing on then was all just cardio, crazy drills, like strikes, fundamental wrestling, chain, and it was all this stuff that like, it's probably the hardest things to learn in wrestling. Like, yeah.
A lot of shoot stuff as well.
A lot of shoot stuff and a lot of just like, you know, it was all chain wrestling all the time. Like, and you had like, you had LJ and you had Michael May and all coming up just showing us all this crazy stuff, which like for me only a couple of months in was like reinventing the wheel. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, here's a wrist lock, here's 10 ways to get out of it, you know? So I honestly think that like it was a really, it was a weird experience not having the ring, but I think it also benefited me, and I think it benefited everyone else as well.
It did, yeah.
Because, I agree. Because we could just focus on just wrestling. That was it.
Yeah. You had, so like, yeah, Jussie, I think it was, coming, I think it was down as well.
Jussie coming down doing training sessions, like, and it was like always packed, and like it didn't matter that we didn't have a ring. People just wanted to train, and that kind of helped us as well, because like those first couple of months, and anyone that starts will get it. It's like, a lot of people start and they'll drop off after a couple of weeks. They'll drop off after a couple of months. For whatever reason, they don't want to commit. Maybe they don't like it. Maybe they're too sore. Whatever reason, a lot of people do quit early.
Yeah.
And I think having this small group of people in this tiny attic so passionate about wrestling. Like, I remember being there the day after Contenders with Darren and Nate telling us about, like, the main event against the Kings. And, like, you know, and it was so exciting that it was like, all these lads that we train with are now starting to get opportunities. So you're feeding off that energy as well. That was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like you were saying, just like learning the basics of chain, but then going on to all this mad stuff with like reversing a wrist lock, stuff like that, shoot stuff. And like,
yeah,
I know you were saying about Steo G coming in for the late warm-ups, but made me think of when Michael May just came back from Japan, right? And he made us do 500 squats. Who walks in at squat 475? What's up, Chiefs?
475. That's up, Chiefs. Well, he's squatting, are you? But stay, like, he didn't need to do warm. That's the difference. Like, look at him. Like, you know, he's literally made of iron. He does not need to warm up. If anyone doesn't need to warm up, it's Steve G. Oh, God, I love Steve.
Yeah. So talking about Steve, like, did you visualize early on that you wanted to be tag partners with Steve?
Well, we started, obviously we had started together, training together. So like, we're next to each other's hip the whole time because we don't know anyone else. So we walk in together, we go and break together, we leave together, we're talking at training. So people kind of piece us together. And we didn't really do like many like training matches or anything like that, but we were just quite close and we were always together. We had already moved to town at this time. We'd moved out to East Wall, and I actually remember vividly in my head, I was a Sunday morning, we're getting ready, we're in between classes, and I was practicing rolls on the mat, and Phil was lying on the mats. Didn't think he was watching me, but he was watching me. And I did a couple of rolls, and he goes, Richie, he's like, did you and Steve ever think of being a tag team? And I was like, well, actually, we have. I was like, and we have an idea for a gimmick. So straight away, I pitched him the Nintembros gimmick, because the whole time myself and Steve had been talking about, well, maybe we should just be a tag team. We're coming up at the same time. We know each other. What can we do? Like, we might as well just do it together, you know, because it's easier. Yeah. It's a lot easier when you're starting out to be a tag team wrestler, because you have four people in the match instead of just yourself. There's less pressure. You have time to get your breath and find your bearings. It's a lot easier even though tag team wrestling is more complex, I guess, but
yeah,
it's easier when you're starting off to have tag matches. Would you agree?
Yeah, you can make it simpler as well. Like, you don't have to have like all these complicated breaking up the pins into the next thing. You can just like simplify it in your first match.
Exactly. Yeah. So we had talked about maybe being a tag team, and like it was so obvious because like the only connection we really had was my cousin, and like going to his birthday party and playing the Super Nintendo. And like when we got a little bit older, we're teenagers, we're like all meeting up in like whoever had a free house and like playing, you know, WrestleMania 2000 and the N64. And like, classic. You know, it was everything we did was revolved around video games.
Yeah.
So we were talking and we're like, why not just merge that in? And I was like, why not just be like these two lads that are like kind of big and kind of in shape, but they're actually kind of goofs because they're nerds and they like playing video games, but it's kind of ironic. And when I started to say it, I was like, that actually sounds quite cool.
Yeah.
Because it'd be different if we came out, we were scrawny little nerds with glasses that were like, oh, we just sit our keyboards all day. It was because like I'm quite big, I'm quite broad, and Steve jacked. Like, do you know what I mean? It's the last thing you would think if you were thought of a nerdy gamer, of this guy that has like the most abs you'll ever see. Like, yeah. So it's like, maybe it's like these guys being nerds is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
So I pitched it to Phil, and he was like, yeah, and then show it to me. I need to see. And it kind of just snowballed from there. Cool. So that's what I think the answer to the question, we knew we had to tag together because it would be a lot easier for us to get opportunities if we do it as a tandem.
Yeah. So how did your first match come to be then in Clara?
In Clara, County Offaly. There's actually, he mentioned about the Nintembros thing. I think we had done one training match as the Nintembros. We brought some controllers and we did all the gimmicks, whatever. And I was, the Clara show was coming up. And yeah. The only other show that had happened that I'd been to was Fight Factory Episode 1.
Right.
And it was the first show in the Sean O'Casey in Eastwall. And it was actually the show where the opener, the ropes broke. Do you remember with Sammy and Phil?
Yeah.
The top rope broke in the old ring. And I was actually, look back in the VOD, when the rope breaks, I was actually there doing ring crew, and you can see me trying to put the rope back up, even though I had no idea what I was doing. And so that was the first show I went to, and the next show was the Clara show. So we'd heard all these epic things about Clara's, like, the crowd is like WrestleMania, and it's like
you know, it wasn't for this one.
So you know what? Yeah, but what was the difference then? What were the other ones like?
2016 one, I was at, you know, Devo, like everyone in Irish wrestling knows Devo. Yeah, it's just this lad that trained with the Wood Brothers, former Irish wrestling tag team champions. Yep. Yeah, this lad Devo, he always brought his family, and like he was a big, big face, brought his family, and there was like 60 of his cousins. So like he always got a huge response. It was proper like WrestleMania, but this one just, I don't know what happened. It's just the Wood Brothers and Devo, they didn't really promote it, I don't think, in Clara. Okay. Like, obviously, we can't really do anything other than, like, social media and stuff like that, but I don't think they posted or anything for it properly, so there was just a dull crowd for it, like.
But yeah, I think you know from, like, the likes of the Wrestling.ie shows and all, anything that's outside of Dublin or any of the main cities, like, if you're not posting, you're not going to get numbers. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, you know, people aren't going to look on Facebook and go, oh, Fight Factory's coming to town. Like, you know, they're going to go into the local shop and see a flyer and go, there's a bit of wrestling, I'll bring the kids. You know? So this show was coming up, and it was actually Liam Royal. I mentioned Liam Royal twice in this podcast. Liam Royal actually messaged me saying, he was a big day for him. Shout out to the big man. He messaged me saying, have you and Steve got gear? And I was like, what? And he was like, have you got gear? And I was like, we've ordered gear, it's on the way. And he was like, you know, get gear. I was talking to Phil, I can't do the next show. And he said, I'm thinking of using a couple of new lads I might use in the Tembros.
Right.
And Phil just did it in a kind of a flippant kind of like, I might use them. And we were like, oh crap, we gotta go get gear. So we kind of half anticipated it might happen. And then he told us, he was like, oh, your first match is going to be Clara, blah, blah, blah. And my mate Dave O'Neill actually made a documentary about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's been released publicly, but it's definitely out there and it will be out there at some point. It's a really, really good documentary. And it basically chronicles us from training, from the Clara show, a little bit of the aftermath, loads of interviews in between. And it's so good. when I think back now, especially now, like when I retire or whatever, and you're not wrestling anymore, to have an actual documentary about my first wrestling match, I think mentally. Is real cool. Because you have it there forever. Like I've seen it now on a documentary. I went to see it in like a small little cinema screen, a screening of it with a bunch That's of randomers class. watching me and Steve talk about wanting to be wrestlers. Like what the hell? It's but hopefully like at some point, Dave, we'll like. I don't know what's happening with it. I don't know whether it's going to be like with a lot of these movies and stuff. They go off to like, you know, film festivals and stuff like that, and they get sent off to different places before they get released. So at some point it might get released on like a VOD, or it might go up for a price or something. But if it does go up, I'll obviously share it on my social medias, because it is quite cool to see us. And like we were completely different to what we are now, because we were so not that I'm not excited about it now, but we were like, it meant the world to us to be a wrestler, you know.
F class. But yeah, so you wrestled in Clara, and then a few weeks later, you'd actually debut on episode 2. So you and Steve pretty much were straight onto shows then after that match. What would be your fondest memories wrestling as Nintembros?
Good question. Really good question. You don't talk what? Well, I remember after the Clara show, I spoke to Kate, and I was like, what do you think of that? And she was like, oh, that was really good. I was like, there wasn't much of a crowd, but it's like the East Wall crowd, I think they'd really like that. So I kind of took that as a hint that maybe they might use us. And the next show, we wrestled the Enterprise, which is Liam Royal and Luke Cullen. Luke Cullen, RIP. he's sadly retired from wrestling. The best hand that ever was. And, you know, we did the Nintembros thing for a good while, and we actually got a lot out of it. And when I think back on it, it's like we probably got too much too soon, to be perfectly honest, because the problem is Dave, the guy that did the documentary, he did the first Nintembros promo, which is the first thing that anyone saw about the Nintembros. It was the one of us in the arcade talking about that match in Fight for Every Episode 3 with the Enterprise. And it was a really high production, good promo that kind of blew up for us. Like we created a Facebook page, we do all these things, and everyone kind of wanted a piece of the Nintembros. People were curious because the gimmick was so good and the promo was so good.
Yeah.
But the problem was we were green as grass. Like we were like, we were not prepared. Like the episode 2 match wasn't good, and we were not prepared to go out there and be on shows. It just happened that we were two guys that were in shape. I had a great gimmick. We probably got a lot of opportunities, maybe a little bit too soon.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
So that effect, it is great experience, but that kind of affected the early stage, because like the problem is when you start off being a professional wrestler, like it's you, the first couple of matches, you just don't understand what you're actually doing, because you're so, and I was especially bad. You're so excitable about wanting to go and do this big move that you learned or do the 10 million things that you learned in training, when you don't realize that that doesn't work within the context of your match. Like you don't understand that like every match on a card, you know, has its place. Everyone has their spot. Everything should be building up to that main event. And you should realize that if I am a tag team match, that's out number 2, doesn't really mean anything. It needs to be a certain way. But all we're going into it going, I want to do my power slam or something like that. You know what I mean? And it's like, That's kind of the mindset we had. We were so excited to do stuff, but we weren't prepared to do any of it. Like, and I think, you know, we did that white collar charity show, and we did that spot where the controller, where I put the controller down in the hangar, where Steve got in, and Steve basically couldn't wrestle, and he could only wrestle if I got a controller, stuck it down his pants, and controlled him. Now we did this in the hangar. And, you know, mainly like a lot of wrestling fans, but a lot of non-wrestling fans and a rowdy OTT, like people drinking, kind of like an over 18s crowd, I guess. So when they saw these two nerds and this lad gets in, puts the controller in your man's arse and tries to control him, they lost their minds. They thought it was the funniest thing they had ever seen. And me and my inexperience and my excitement, I latched onto that. And we did that spot then in every single match for the next couple of months, like, you know, and we drove it into the ground because it never worked again. And, you know, that was where the kind of inexperience came in as well. So I think that when I look back on it, I wish we had of you can't say which we had waited, because like we were training in 6 months at the time. All we wanted to do was be wrestlers. When you're given the opportunity, you're going to take it.
Yeah, you're not going to say
but
no.
But I can see why. You're not going to say no, but I can see why a lot of wrestlers would be training for a year, or sometimes 2 years, sometimes longer, before they actually have a match, because there is a law that you have to understand before you go and start having matches. And we didn't really understand. So we were kind of, you know, running before we could walk, I guess the expression is. But like we had some great times. Like that hangar moment was a huge moment, because that was the first like big live crowd where like we got a huge reaction, and it was like people doing a Nintendo's chants in the crowd. We've never had that before. We were like, what the hell? Like people are cheering for us, you know, as a wrestler. But then we got other opportunities elsewhere. Like we had a really good run in PWU. We did some stuff in CCW that went really well. And like for two lads that had very little experience, we did get a lot out of it while it was happening. I think greatest moment to answer, this is a really long-winded way to answer your question. Sorry, I do ramble. I think the PWU Blitz was probably the biggest moment, because
that
was our debut up there. We'd never wrestled in Belfast before. We'd never been in the Blitz. It was a random, the Blitz, if anyone doesn't know the Blitz was PWU's version of the Royal Rumble, which they had once a year on New Year's Eve. It was always great crack, because people would just turn up and drink, and everyone loves the Royal Rumble. Everyone loves Countdown, surprises, all that stuff. And I ended up coming out, I think I came out like number 10, and Steve came out at like number 11. And I remember we stood backstage with JDP, and it was waiting. It was like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And Tembro's music hits. The crowd go crazy. JDP's looking at me going, what the hell? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why they're reacting like that. And it was just really exciting, because like it was the first time we had traveled all the way up to Belfast to go out there to get this big reaction, to have all these people chanting for us that we didn't know even exactly like. And then even the next day, like I remember my Twitter blown up. I was getting like all these mentions and likes, and the people in Belfast who had never seen us before appreciating what we did. So that was probably the best moment, because it was just such a surprise, and it was the first of many like big wrestling road trips going all around the country and elsewhere, you know.
Yeah, that's class. Yeah, the Blitz has always been like probably PWU's biggest show of the year, I think, back then, because like there'd always be such a good atmosphere. Like you had their PWU loyal fans, but you also had like Dublin fans that went up, and there was a good contingent of the Dublin fans there.
I think we got a big reaction because of that as well. Well, apparently we did. It was a cool show to have. And because it's on New Year's, like if you want to go up and, you know, go to a wrestling show, go out and have a few drinks and stay in Belfast, if that's your jam, then that's a cool night out.
So as you went on with the Nintendo's, then you did CCW, you did PWU, you did a good few Fight Factory shows, but then Steve would kind of stop training. Instead of going on to singles action, you actually formed another tag team with newcomer John Bernard. I think he had his first match in the Rumble, and then the show after he would actually team with you. So how did this new tag team actually start?
It started to wind down for Steve for quite some time, and it was one of those things where he had a couple of injuries. He wasn't really committed to it anymore. He had a lot of other things going on, and I don't think he realized that he wanted to quit until it actually happened, if that makes sense. So it was a couple of months of him and Han, and eventually he was like, I'm not gonna come anymore. I was like, grand. So I didn't know what to do. I was sitting there with this gimmick, which I thought was the greatest gimmick in the world, and would, you know, I'd be in WrestleMania with this gimmick, and I didn't really know where to go with it. And I remember actually talking to Justy about it down in Eastwall. And he was like, oh, why don't you like just be the Nintendo? Go be a singles, do it on your own, do the whole shtick.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't know. It's like, maybe I'm not ready for that. Maybe it needs to be a tandem. And I didn't really know what to do. But at the same time, you know, John Bernard was just starting to light it up at training. Like even today, like John Bernard does not get enough credit for how good he is.
He's really
absolutely
good.
Everything. I think John Bernard is like a hidden gem in professional wrestling. Like nobody has seen what John Bernard can and will be one day.
Yeah.
Because since then, and even more so now, he is incredible at everything. I couldn't say enough good things about Kieran. He's a really nice guy as well.
To work.
Brilliant at Harrow work, really good work, just really good overall, and he's a really nice guy as well. But he was just starting to like really do well in training. And, you know, he was doing the whole scientist gimmick where he was drinking the potions and kind of like, I think it was like a Rick and Morty slash thing. And I was like, all right. And I kind of was like, that kind of half fits my gimmick. It's kind of quirky. It's kind of weird. I was like, could we kind of merge the two things together? So I had a chat with him and he was interested, and we came up with the whole like Retro Galactic thing that he's just, I'm a nerdy gamer and he's a scientist and we're attacking for some reason.
Imagine explaining that to a non-wrestling fan.
Yeah, it was, we did all those, remember we did all those video promos for the PW show?
I remember that, yeah.
Where we had, John was, one second. Yeah, so we had, it was around the time the first Trinity Brawl show happened. And while that show happened, we actually had that facility with the stage and the lighting rigs and the setup for like a whole week. So myself and John were like, why don't we just film some promos? So we did a whole shtick where like I went to John Bernard for like a new partner and he was using this intergalactic machine that was like creating new tag team partners, but it was alternate versions of, it was such, they were so bad. It was alternate versions of current wrestlers. So like LJ came out and he kept going blah blah and he couldn't stop, and that's all he could do was do blah. So he was like malfunctioning. And there was a Jay Money one where he came out and he was real poor, and it was like he wasn't rich, he was, you know. And it was one where it was Justy and we did our stupid Family Guy chicken fight thing. And we just kind of used that as a like, and at the end of it, like I was battered from the Justy thing and I was like, oh, you just want to be my partner. And we kind of just went from there. And, you know, at the time I just thought like, you know, Kieran's great. He's doing so well in training. He got a good gimmick. He's got great character. I've got a great character. Let's put the two things together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did well. Like it was very short, but like we got a lot out of the Retro Galactic thing, like, especially in like, we had a couple of matches in Courage, which, didn't last very long, I know, but like, we got some good stuff out of Retro Galactic while we did it.
Yeah.
But it just didn't work for either of us. I guess that we weren't right for each other as a team. We just didn't realize it. We just were so passionate. We're two really intense, passionate guys that really like wrestling, and it just didn't work. And it just kind of got to the point where we weren't really having good matches. We weren't getting opportunities. Things were starting to fall. And we had a chat after training one day. We were like, you know what? I was like, I don't think it's working. I was like, I think we should just go and kind of do our own thing. And we just did. And that was it. Well, we got, like, as I said, like the run we had, especially the Courage stuff, like was really, really enjoyable. Like I'd probably watch back in those Courage matches, like, and still enjoyed them for what they were, because they were cool crack, you know?
Yeah. I think part of it as well is you've already pretty much done the gimmick, like your side of it anyway, the Nintendo. The only new part of it was just John getting to do his shtick as well.
Exactly. And I think that it was my issue, because instead of just going and doing my own thing, like I already knew I wanted to do the Own Your Destiny thing. I already knew that was there. But I was just too afraid to do it. And I just was clinging on to the fact that the Nintendo was such a strong gimmick. It's like a shield you can hide behind.
Yeah.
And I kind of threw John in there with me, because I was like, well, I could just, he can be a tag team with me, and there you go, easy. So I think he was happy to do it because it was giving him opportunities. And I was doing it just because I was afraid to do anything else, where I should have just, you know, not to use a Pokemon phrase, but I should have just evolved. And I think that was me just, I didn't want to not be in Nintendo because I was afraid of it not working, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned the Own Your Destiny character, like yourself and John would go your separate ways and you completely, completely revamped your character. Now, we know in wrestling, if you're known to be a certain gimmick, it can be quite hard to break away from it, but you pretty much nailed it with the opening promo. What was the inspiration for the idea for the Own Your Destiny character? And can you tell us what went into the promo you did?
Yeah, so it actually started with a conversation I had with Be Cool, of all people. And we talked, I don't know how it came up, but we ended up talking about me losing the weight. So I told him I was 22 stone. I lost 9 stone. He's obviously looking at me now going like, what the hell? How did this lad lose so much weight? Didn't say anything at the time. And it was 3 or 4 months later, he texts me randomly and says, are you at training? this week? And I was like, what? He kept asking me, was I at training? And we kept missing each other. And I was like, why does this lad want to see me? What's going on? Like, you know, am I in trouble or something? Like, you know. And I turned up at training and I was like, what do you want to talk to me about? I was like, am I on OTT? You know, no, it's like, I didn't know what he wanted. Like, and then he was like, I was thinking that maybe like, because you have this weight loss story that you lost this incredible amount of weight and nobody knows. It's like, why would you not become like a fitness instructor or a fitness guru or something like that? And I was like talking to him. I was like, you know what? I was like, that's not a bad idea. I kind of half dismissed it at the time because I didn't know what he was going to say to me. But I went away and I thought about it. And the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, I was like, that there's something in that.
Yeah.
But then I started to kind of apply what I do in my real life, because Tim Bros was kind of my real life. It was like I was always a nerd growing up. I always played games. I still play games now. And it's like, you know, you can focus on something that you're passionate about and it's something that you can just run with. So what I did with Own Your Destiny, I was just started to maybe look at what I do in my real life.
Yeah.
So it's like, at the time I was doing, like, I was in a training and development role in an office and it was a pretty good job, but all I was doing all the time was standing in a suit, training people, motivating people. Like, it was a lot of people in, like, part of it was a call center. So like, I was listening in on people, talking on the phone, giving them feedback, directing them. So a lot of things what I was doing was like a little bit kind of motivational anyway. And, you know, I was quite good at it. And now I'm in sales and all I do is kind of sell stuff. And I was like, that part of me is kind of who I am now, I guess.
Right.
I was like, what if I just kind of merge that into some sort of a gimmick? So I took what BQL said and said, well, like, instead of just being like a fitness guru, what if I was like a life coach and a motivational coach? And like, it just kind of spiraled from there.
Yeah.
And then I have to give credit here because I'll get in trouble if I don't. The Own Your Destiny thing actually came from another Irish wrestler. So we were going up to PWU for the Blitz one year, actually. And I was in a car with Jay Money, Debbie Keitel, and Justy. And we were chatting away and I was talking about the Nintendo. I was still doing Nintendo Bros a little bit. I think I had a match up there and I was in the Rumble, I think. And I pitched the guys, because obviously you're in a car, you're driving, you have a lot of time to talk about stuff. So I pitched them this idea for this motivational speaker. And I was like, what about if everything is like, you know, what drives you? What motivates you? Where is your destiny going to be? Blah, blah, blah. And then Justy just goes out of nowhere. Why don't you just say, own your destiny? I was like, own Richards, own your destiny. You're a goddamn genius. You know? And it kept snowballing from there. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that, like, oh, well, you know, this motivational speaker character really hasn't been done in this way. And, like, you know, I didn't want it to just be a motivational speaker. I wanted it to be a motivational speaker that's also a bit of an arsehole. And the whole idea and the whole crux of the character is that, like, the character is, like, really realistic. Like, I'm portraying myself as someone who's a motivational speaker who's here to help you own your destiny, to help you save you, blah, 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 blah. But I'll never actually save anyone. The whole idea is that, like, I will use the fact that I'm portraying myself as a motivational speaker as a mechanism to make myself feel better. And the way I'll do that is I'll put you down. So I'll be like, Dom Tuck, you're a loser. You have a terrible cardigan. You can't even do a promo. And I'll tell you everything that's wrong with you and then not actually fix you in any way. All I'll say is all you have to do is own your destiny. But I'll never explain what that means. And the whole idea is that, like, you're using that. I'm putting you down to make myself feel better. Because deep down, I'm insecure about myself because I used to be fat. I used to be a nerd. But now I'm portraying myself as this motivational mastermind where deep down I still know I'm the nerd. I'm still the fat guy. Well, I'm using, I'm putting this across that I'm still in the tempo at heart. But the whole idea was that I wanted it to be that, like, when I come out, and it's a lot of stuff I kind of practice on the wrestling.ie shows where, like, I'll come out and I will do a 5-minute promo as just a motivational speaker. And I'll be like, where are we? Oh, we're in, you know, Galway tonight. Galway is an amazing place and blah, blah, blah. And I will say, you know, cheer, go away, blah, blah, blah. And halfway through it, I'll turn on them and just start putting them down. So I always wanted to be like, you know, I portray myself as someone that is this, you know, guru, but deep down, I'm just using it to treat people badly. You know? So once I got down what, I know that's really complex, but like once I got an idea of what the character is, I talked to your man Dave again. This guy Dave is behind everything. Like he did the first Nintembros promo, he did the documentary. So I called him up to do this, and obviously like he's great, he does great stuff. And what we did before we did the promo is we went into a random cubicle. I filmed it in the office I was working in. We wanted to figure out what the character actually was. So we sat down in the cubicle and he just interviewed me for an hour straight in character.
Right.
And the whole time I just answered questions in the gimmick. He pushed me in certain directions, quizzed me on stuff, got me to talk about stuff. And then we just watched the back and we looked at how I reacted to stuff, what way I said stuff, how I betrayed myself. And then we just came up with the basic idea for the promo off that. And what we wanted to do with the promo is the first thing we said is we wanted with every Only Destiny promo, you'll see it with every promo I've ever done, we wanted to be as little of it to be about wrestling as possible.
Yeah.
So if you watch that first promo or any other Own Your Destiny promo, there's very little mention about wrestling. The first one doesn't mention wrestling at all. It doesn't even show me in Trunks.
Yeah.
Because we wanted the character to come across as something that's more than that. That anyone could just click onto Instagram and go and believe it's real to a certain extent. So that's kind of where it came from. So we were like, let's film it like that. We wanted it to kind of half look like an ad, like a perfume ad or an ad for like sunglasses or something like that, where it's kind of like, kind of comes across as obnoxious, but you can get that, you know, he's a guru, he's a motivational speaker, and like it can come across without directly saying it. And I think it worked really well. Like it blew up when it first came out. I couldn't believe the feedback we got when that first promo went out.
Yeah.
Really surprised.
Yeah, I think that's what everyone remembers, like that first promo hitting.
When the promo went up, I didn't tell anyone it was going to actually happen. And before the promo went out, I filmed it. I had it there for a couple of weeks. I only sent it to a select few people. I sent it to the lads in Phoenix. I sent it to Phil. I sent it to Joe Cabray. And I sent it to a couple of close friends. And I was like, I just wanted to get some feedback from, well, one, friends and family, but two, the important people in Irish wrestling to see if it actually works, you know?
Mm.
They all really liked it. And I was like, right, like, let's launch this. So I still had my Instagram as an Intembros thing. So I put up a thing, which I put up a game over sign on my Instagram. And I said, continue, yes or no. And I wrote underneath it, should I continue, yes or no? And I said, nothing else.
Right.
And people were commenting on it. They thought I was going to retire. People, and I put up my stories. And people were sending me messages going, are you quitting wrestling? What's going on? What's happening? Da, 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 da. And then I just went blank on my Instagram for a day. For a whole day, I just went completely blank. And then I just threw the promo up. I deleted everything else off my Instagram. And the very first post then, the only post, was that promo.
Sweet. Yeah, so you debuted your character on episode 8. You made John Bernard own his destiny. And then you kind of struck upon gold because you kind of got put into this tag team with Andy Steele then. Can you talk to us about how that came to be then?
Yes, like it kind of just weirdly happened because the Own Your Destiny thing launched the week of the Fight Factory show or the week before a Fight Factory show. And Phil was like, you know, the card's already made. I don't really have anything for you to do. But then it was like this whole John Bernard thing. It fits in with myself, me coming out and making John Bernard own his destiny and snap and beat the crap out of Sharpay.
Bashed him.
But then after that, it was like, you know, bashed him, yeah. And then it was the next show after that. We weren't really sure what we were doing. And the couple of days, maybe a day or two before, the graphic actually went up that it was myself, Andy Steele and Justy against the O3, Big Rab, Justin Daniels, and Aoife Valkyrie. And I was like, oh, cool. That's a cool idea for a match. And myself and Andy had actually been against each other in a tag match before. Myself and John Bernard wrestled Flamboyant Fabio and Andy Steele a couple of episodes before. But that was the only really connection that we had. So we went there, we had the 6-man match. Really, really loved that match. Really happy with that match. It was on the Jonathan Gresham show, I think.
Yeah,
that was really good show overall. And like episode 9, and I was really, really happy with it. And I was really actually happy to wrestle Valkyrie before she went, because obviously now she's in WWE, she can't wrestle guys. It was like one of the last people to actually get to wrestle her which was great. Like, you know, I didn't even know I was going to be one of the last people to wrestle, but it was great to have an opportunity to actually do it. And after that, myself and Andy, we just clicked. I don't know. It's just like, it's a weird thing, because I didn't want to be in another tag team. I didn't want to be in another tag team, I'll be perfectly honest, because, you know, Nintembros didn't work out. Retro Galactic didn't work out. And a lot of that was my fault. And I was like, oh, another tag team. I was like, you know, because when looking at Andy, it's like you're looking at someone, it's the same as Kieran. Like, you know, Andy has, he's really, really, really good wrestler. He's a really strong gimmick. He's in great shape. Like, there's nothing Andy Steele doesn't have. But that doesn't mean that Andy Steele and I would be a good tag team.
Right.
And I was like, what if we're not? What if we go into another tag team and then it just doesn't work?
Mm.
And then I'm just the lad that bounces from every one tag team to another and they just all fail, you know? But the more we talked about it and the more we realized that, like, you know, our gimmicks are quite similar. And, you know, Andy, you know, was starting to go into more of a, like, kind of a businessman, entrepreneur, snarky kind of, like, when you think about what his gimmick was at the time and what my gimmick was, they do actually fit quite well together.
Yeah.
What I was saying about Andy is, like, obviously we did that 6-man episode 9, really happy with it. We had really good chemistry. I was obviously skeptical about wanting to be in the tag team. And I said it to him. I told him, I said, I don't want to be in our tag team. We're not a tag team. And he just took to Twitter and started, like, saying how great a tag team we were and, like, ribbing me on Twitter because I was saying I didn't want to be in a tag team. He actually put he put it on the Low Blows podcast. He put it in as a question as why we are such a good team, or should we be called, what should our team name be, or something like that. And the lads actually, I think it was Keane and Katie and Rick Nash, actually talked about it.
And
I was like, I don't want to be in a tag team, you know, the Andy Steelers. Yeah. But I think the more we trained together, the more we talked about it, the more we realized that, like, you know, there is a lot we could do as a team. And, like, I think we still maintain who we are individually. So if you were booking a Five Factor show or booking a Phoenix show or wherever, you could put myself or Andy in a tag match, or you could put us in single matches, because we're two separate entities. It's not like you're booking Din and Tembros. You know what I mean? You're booking Andy Steele and Owen Richards as a team. So I think that kind of fits in that we're two different personalities. But I think it's funny because we never really got a chance to do much after that, because we haven't actually had a straight up tag team match on a wrestling show, believe it or not.
That's gas. That'll change.
We've had, he wrestled Justy on a Five Factor show and I was the manager, ended in a DQ. We had a handicap match with Justy. I was away for a show and he wrestled Shark Bay. And that's it. We went into lockdown. So we haven't had a tag, since we've become an official tag team, we haven't actually had a match together as a team. But during that period of a couple of months where COVID had really slowed down, I think the numbers were like in the 5s and 10s and 20s, and we were back training for a while. And we did a lot of stuff then and we really clicked well. So now going into 2021, or whenever we're allowed to wrestle again, there's a lot of cool stuff we have planned. So we have, like, we bought new matching gear that we were really looking forward to showing off. We have these really cool rain jackets. We have new music. We have a whole new presentation for the tag team. That we're obviously just going to unleash once we're back on shows and stuff like that. So that's really exciting. And it's kind of helped the lockdown that I've had, Andy, because we're constantly in contact and we're constantly talking about ideas for when we're back wrestling. This is what we're going to do. These are the promos we're going to do. This is the gear that we got made. So it's really cool to have that to look forward to whenever we're back wrestling.
2025,
yeah. It's funny, you this is the clearest you've been now, and we've been talking for an hour and a half.
Yeah. We're nearly finished. So I'll just finish with one question then. You were talking about, like, what you're hoping for when you do return to wrestling. Is there any, like, goals or people in particular that you'd like to accomplish or face when you're back wrestling?
I kind of have, like, I think we all have our little lists in our head of people, like, you want to wrestle. But, like, I'm obviously not Jonathan Gresham. I'm not going to be putting it up. These are my top 10 people I want to wrestle, you know? It's like you just have kind of a little bit of a, like a checklist of people that you'd like to wrestle. And, like, before lockdown, I started to kind of get through that list. Like, I had a 6-man with Morden Hype and had, had a match on wrestling.eu with Michael May. And I always wanted to wrestle Michael. Like, we've been, like, training together for years, seeing Michael do all these great things. I just wanted to have a match with Michael May. I think everyone wants to have a match with Michael May, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely.
So I still have a list of people that like I do would like to wrestle if it could happen. But really, I think whenever we get back, whenever that is, and like obviously the last like year has been terrible for everyone with COVID, and then obviously a lot of different things have happened in wrestling that we don't really need to discuss now. But like I'm hoping that when wrestling does return, we're returning into like a really good, you know, safe environment with the right people pushing, like, because we're all passionate about this business. We're all passionate about wrestling. And yeah. I think that the right people in the right spots when COVID isn't a factor, I think wrestling will flourish and will be great again. And I want to be part of that. So yeah. One of the things is I just want to help build back up the scene whenever that is, or whatever needs to be done to build back up the scene. So that's important for myself. I think really it's just reestablishing myself, because I feel like once wrestling starts again, like it's like we're hitting the reset button.
Oh yeah.
And I think that like everyone's starting from fresh. It's not like I'm going to walk out like I just did a show. The last match I had was in March 2020, like, you know. So it's not like I just walk back out and like be the same. So I feel like number one is reestablishing myself with the brands that we currently do. So obviously Fight Factory, get back training when we're training, get back on shows, get Fight Factory back doing what they do best and doing shows and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Continue what I'm doing up in Titanic. Like I had some really good stuff going up there, really good plans. And you know, the guys up there have treated me really well. So I'm looking forward to that. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in Phoenix as well, because like, I feel like, you know, Phoenix is at a point now where like they're about to go into a whole new phase. They're crowning a new champion. They're, you know, hopefully going to bring in a tag team division at some point. And like, there's a lot of exciting things, a lot of young, really good wrestlers like the likes of Reardon O'Connor down there. So there's a lot of fun, really interesting things happening down in Phoenix. And like, and the lads down there have like treated me really well. We went down once, trained over the summer. And like, I feel like anytime we've gone down, it's always been really positive. So I want to give a lot more back to Phoenix as well. So I think, you know, establishing myself in those three where I'm currently, like they're the rosters I'm kind of on at the moment. But then after that, I just want to keep expanding. So obviously myself and Andy do the tag team thing, you know, eventually do the likes of OTT, do more stuff in the UK. And then, you know, sky's the limit after that. Like, I think, to be honest, like the thing that I think a lot of people are going to do when we get back to wrestling is just not live with any regrets or not take any of it for granted. 100%. And I want to walk in and take, like, value every show, value every moment, you know, and like go out there and just know that, like, you know, we're back. Let's make the most of it. Like, so I think doing those things, I think trying to get the most out of it, if we can get over and do stuff in the UK, and obviously in Irish wrestling, OTT is going to be a goal for everyone, like, you know, and we'll see if something like that materializes. But I think that starting with the base promotions and then seeing from there.
Yeah.
See, I'm not getting any younger, so I need to have to do it all now, Don, before the time runs out. Like, do you know what I mean? I didn't start in 2006 in Irish Whip Wrestling.
But so are you ready for some social media questions then?
I am ready for some social media questions. Cool.
Let's do it. So from Twitter.
Sorry, for anyone that's before you say that, for anyone that's still listening, I'm so sorry that this has gone on so long. I ramble and, you know, whatever.
I'm sorry too for letting this happen. Roscom Dan, aka Dan Manning, says favorite Subway sandwich and favorite pre-wrestling training meal.
Oh, good question. Really good question. Favorite Subway sandwich would be foot long, obviously. The cheesy bread. What's the, you know, the cheesy bread you can get? And a BMT. Do you ever have a BMT?
I think
the
so.
Italian
yeah.
BMT. Italian BMT, and then I would put the spicy sauce and jalapenos and lettuce. That's what I put on the Subway. I haven't had a Subway in probably about 5 years. And I don't think I'll ever have a Subway again. But I don't know why. I don't think people still eat. I think people eat meatball marinaras. But I think if I was to go in, I'd get an Italian BMT.
Yeah.
And what was the other one? What was the other question?
Pre-wrestling training meal. Which one's your favorite?
Pre-wrestling training or match?
He just says pre-wrestling training.
Oh, pre-wrestling training. Generally before matches or training, like, I wouldn't really have much to eat, to be perfectly honest. Like, I feel like it's like, like if I eat a meal, especially before a show, I feel like it's sitting on my stomach and it makes me feel kind of lethargic. I feel like if I go and like, and you feel more ripped as well, but I feel like if I go and train or have a match like on an empty stomach, just with loads of water, I find that I kind of perform a little bit better. I think it's a bit like mental clarity is a bit better.
Yeah.
And I find it's easier. And then just eat a big meal after.
The real deal, Andy Steele, says the best debut of all time. And why is it Taz/Taz with two Zs?
Oh, what a great question. Okay.
Class question.
I have to explain this because I keep getting heat about how much I love Taz because people don't understand what happened with Taz. I'm going to tell you what happened with Taz.
Okay.
Taz was the man. Like, I'm watching the Attitude Era. I didn't have any link to ECW, but as like the Attitude Era is going on, we've got Rock Awesome, we've got all that stuff going on. The only thing I'm hearing about ECW was in like magazines, maybe the odd videotape you might get off a mate or something like that. And it was all about this guy, Taz. And like, he was a badass. He was like ECW champion. He was choking people out. He was suplexing people. I looked at Taz and was like, he's the most dangerous man alive. But like, you know, this is only for magazines. So you don't have to like social media. You can't just go and look at all his matches. But I was like, that guy's a killer.
Mm.
He's going to murder everyone. So this is Taz with one Z. Then Taz with two Zs joined the WWF.
Yeah.
And when I realized it started to go wrong, it was the 2000 Royal Rumble. Taz came out to wrestle Kurt Angle. He got a huge pop, Madison Square Garden. I think the crowd knew it was going to happen. This is when dirt cheats were starting to get popular. Because Angle comes out, it's like, I've heard the rumors, you've heard the rumors. And it was Taz. Gigantic pop. I didn't see that Royal Rumble because I'd school the next day, but my mate watched it. And I didn't know it was going to be Taz. And he said to me, I'm so annoyed. Kurt Angle lost to some fat lad with a towel on his head. And I was like, what is he talking about? And I saw it was Taz. And I was like, oh my God, his perception of this guy is just a small, stumpy guy with a towel on his head. Like, he doesn't know this is Taz. Like, you know? And I think that once Taz came into WWF, he struggled for his whole career between being Taz with one Z and Taz with two Zs. Taz with two Zs is very bad. Like,
yeah.
Taz is from the Red Hook section of Brooklyn, New York. Like, listen to that alone. You hear that, you're like, oh, he's a murderer. He's going to kill everyone, like, you know? And I'm going to give you an example of where Taz struggled between being Taz with one Z and Taz with two Zs. Anyone that's listening to this is going to think I'm insane. But I was watching an old Monday Night Raw recently, and it was 2000, April 2000. And it was just after WrestleMania. And Taz was in an Intercontinental title match with Chris Benoit. Jeez, we mentioned Chris Benoit twice in this podcast. Welcome to the Chris Benoit podcast with Dom Tuck. And Chris, they had an IC title match. Taz's music hits. Massive pop, right? The crowd are popping for Taz so much at the start.
Yeah.
He comes out. He's looking badass. He's got the towel. He's breathing heavily. He gets in with Benoit. They start beating the crap out of each other. Chops, forearms, suplexes. And I'm like, oh, it's Taz, one Z. It's like, he's here. This is it. Yeah. This is ECW Taz. I knew. And this is, I was only watching this the other day. And they have a short match, bit of a brawl. Then out of nowhere, he puts on the Taz mission. I was like, that's it. Game over. Done. And Benoit was in the Radicals at the time. They just arrived, and Perry Saturn runs out. I'm like, oh no, Perry Saturn's going to ruin everything. Runs up to the top ropes. Taz still has the Taz mission on. He throws Benoit out of the Taz mission into the ropes, crotches Perry Saturn, right? Taz gets up to the top, belly to back suplexes Perry Saturn off the top ropes, clotheslines him out of the ring. I'm losing my mind. Taz with one Z. And but then something happened, though. He looked out into the crowd. Maybe he saw a sign that said T-A-Z-Z, or maybe he just heard the crowd, or like, but for a second he realized that maybe I'm not Taz with one Z anymore. Maybe I deserve that other Z. Turns around, throws a clothesline. Chris Benoit gives him one German suplex. Not two, not three. One German suplex. Bridge. One, two, three. Done.
That's heartbreaking.
So my theory is Taz is a badass. Taz is the man. But when he became Taz with two Zs, it was just a different man. And he was always struggling with the two Zs who were dragging him down. We always wanted to be the original Taz, but he could never. And I think the name did it. There you go. Here's my Taz story. Thanks, Andy, for revealing. Which of a weird Taz fan I am.
I don't know how we're going to top that, but I'm going to try.
This is why this podcast has been so long, because I just spent 5 minutes talking about Taz with two Zs.
Terry Thatcher. Ooh, this is an interesting one. We didn't get to talk about Phoenix when I was on the show. So while you have Owen, ask him if he thinks the Phoenix Championship will look better around my waist or over my shoulder.
Terry. Maybe you'll put it in the fridge like his NWA title. How did that go? Or NLW title. How did that go? No, he lost it. Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff going on down in Phoenix, because obviously they're going to crown a champion. They had this tournament. The tournament didn't happen because of COVID. And now suddenly we're in a situation where myself and Terry are getting an opportunity that we probably didn't think we were going to have. Because we were both doing different things. We weren't in the tournament to start with.
Mm.
But now suddenly we're in the title picture. So it's interesting, because this wasn't what was supposed to be happening. So I don't know what's going to happen. I wrestled Terry Thatcher. It was my fourth or fifth match, one of my first ever singles matches. And he was the Irish Dragon that was on a wrestling.ie show.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, it was me and him. I did the hot stuff gimmick. And we had a singles match on that. No, I was really, really inexperienced at the time. But it was grand. Like, he was really nice to me afterwards. We had a really good experience. But I want that Terry Thatcher to see me now.
Yeah.
To see the me that has the years experience, the over 100 matches. Like, I'm a different person now to what I was then. And I want to show him that. So our answer is question. If he doesn't put it in his fridge or on his shoulder or around his waist, well, he might not have it in the first place.
Oh, got him.
But we'll see. And you can, don't forget as well, like, Reardon O'Connor won an opportunity to be in that match as well. So whenever Phoenix returns, like that is a triple threat match for the Phoenix Heavyweight Championship. So, you know, and he, as I said earlier, he's the young star down there. He has so much potential, so much charisma. Like, triple threat match, anyone can win.
Mm. That'll be very intriguing. We'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Next question. This comes from Instagram now. So Simpsons Wrestling Meme says, what brand of fake tan does he use? Ask him for a friend.
Do you know what? I get so much crap for wearing fake tan on Irish shows in general, especially in Cork. Like, right. Oh, you have a shit tan, blah, 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 blah. I don't even wear a fake tan. I do sunbeds. Like, people think that my real tan, which I earned through electronic sun rays, is fake tan. So to answer Simpsons Meme's stupid question, I don't wear fake tan, pal, so I can't recommend any.
Wow. Jesus, I got intense there. Sean McGovern says, any Nintendo shirts going?
Any Nintendo shirts going? There is a couple of Nintendo Bro shirts going. I was thinking of maybe selling them for charity or something, but I know LJ Cleary would break his heart because he really, really, really wants one. He has this weird fascination with old school wrestling gimmick shirts. And Nintendo's, the first shirt was amazing. It was a cool shirt.
Mm.
So no, the answer is no.
What about a Retro Galactic t-shirt?
We never got it made.
Ah,
we never got t-shirts. Like, we had a logo and all, but we never really went through with it. That's Retro Galactic was like all these great things that just never really materialized, because it started and ended so quickly.
That's fair.
If there was a Retro Galactic shirt, I think everyone in the Fire Factory would buy it, and no one else would buy it.
Literally every single person in the gym would just wear it to training, and that's it. So Dave O'Brien says, after Bassmasters, what's Owen's favorite TV show? In brackets, ask him this, he will get it.
Oh my God, that's so inside. Oh my God. Okay, so that's basically from the movie Ghostbusters 2. Right. And it's a moment that I just find ridiculously funny, and it's not even a really important part of the movie, but Bill Murray's character, Peter Venkman, if anyone who hasn't seen Ghostbusters 2, go watch it now. If you haven't seen it, you're weird. The movie starts where the Ghostbusters are retired. They're not really Ghostbusters anymore. And Peter Venkman is working on like this TV show called World of the Psychics, where he brings on all these people that are a bit crazy and think they're psychics, and one guy thinks the world is going to end, and it's a terrible TV show.
Right.
And the whole idea is that, like, it's building up to them eventually going back to being the Ghostbusters. And Sigourney Weaver's character, Dana, is working in, like, a museum. And Peter goes in to see her in the museum. And he walks up to the security guard, and he's like, oh, Dana Barrett. And he's like, oh, room, whatever. And as he goes to walk off, the old man calls him back, and he goes, you're Peter Venkman, World of the Psychics. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, that's one of my two favorite shows. And he's like, what's the other one? And he's like, oh, Bassmasters. It's a fishing show. Right? And I just found it so funny. And Bill Murray's like, yeah, I know Bassmasters. I know Bassmasters. And like the line, the whole scene just makes no sense in the context of Ghostbusters. But the only theory I really have on it is that, like, maybe that's a way of showing that his show is failing so much that this weird guy thinks a fishing show is better than Peter Venkman's show. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But every time I watch a movie, this one scene, because it's so weird, it's like, it's one of my first two favorite shows. What's your other one? Bassmasters, the fishing show. And one night I just sent it to Dave because I thought it was so funny. And I don't even remember doing it, but that's really funny. But anyway, if you're watching Ghostbusters 2, look out for that scene.
Andy Steele, two question wanker, says Dom Tuck or Bruce Pritchard?
I think you would be a great Bruce Pritchard if you actually did some of the impressions that you can do live on air. Like, I know you don't have the testicular fortitude to do any of the impressions that I know you can do. So, but Bruce does. Bruce will do impressions of Vincent,
like, the Lord of the Manor, of Sir Paul, like, Tracy.
That's pretty much the one I was looking for. Good man. Paul's not going to listen to this, don't worry.
Definitely not.
And you wrestled them, you're allowed to do an impression of them. But if you did impressions, I'd pick you over Bruce.
It would just be that and Father Ted impressions. That's only ones I'm good at. Maybe I'll save that for another time. But for now, I'm going to end this with Clayton Long Klong from Club Rock Shandy asks, do I still have Owen Richards' leap card?
Oh, no. Oh, God. I'm happy this is at the end so people don't have to hear this story. Wait, I've been talking shite the whole podcast, so I'll try and keep this one brief. Training had just kind of winded down. Sometimes a lot of time I'm training. We would half finish training, but still be in the ring, kind of trying stuff or goofing around or whatever.
Mm.
And a couple of people were in the ring doing their bits. I was sat down in the corner, like I was ready to take a stink face or something. And I was just chilling. Training was done for me. And anyone that knows Clayton Long Klong, you know, 9 times out of 10, he is the funniest person in the room. He's a hyperactive lunatic, and it's absolutely hilarious. But that one time, if you're in a bad mood or he gets you the wrong way, he can be the annoyingest little bastard you can ever meet. And he just rubs you the wrong way, and he knows he's doing it, and he does it even more, right? And I love him to death, and I love that he does it. And I see him do it to other people all the time. So he was walking around being clowned, doing all these funny things, because he always just, he has to be the center of attention whenever he's in a room. And he went, and I had left my gear bag and all my stuff over in one of the corners. And we used to have this, like, shelf in the old gym where you put your shoes and stuff on, and I didn't have my bank card with me, so I usually have my bank card and my leap card. I left my leap card on top of the bookcase, so it's like there's no point in me putting it anywhere else, just in case I lose it, I leave it on top of this so I can get home. Klong's walking around doing his thing. He sees the leap card, he picks it up. He walks up to the edge of the ring with the leap card in his hand and was like, who owns this leap card? He's looking at it. Who owns it? And I'm like, that's my leap card. And he was like, oh, what? And he's looking at it. Now, before I say this, anyone that knows me knows I'm very mild-mannered. I never really get angry. I don't have heat with anyone. I don't think I've ever been in a real fist fight in my life. I'm literally like a big teddy bear. But for some reason, I just snapped, right? So like, he had the leap card in his hand, and I was like, that's my leap card, put it back. And he just threw the leap card in the ring. And I'm like, that's not where my leap card goes. Put my leap card back. And he's like, no.
No.
Like, what, put my leap card back. And suddenly, it starts to get into an argument. And I'm like, you can do the clown impressions if you want. And he's like, no. And he was like, I'm not putting it. I was like, put it back. Put it back now. And he gets in the ring. And I'm like, put my leap card back. And I'm standing up. He's standing up. then suddenly we're like squaring up to each other. Now, again, I don't think I've ever been in a fight in my life that I can remember. And I'm squaring up to this guy. And bear in mind, like, I'm pretty big. I'm 105 kg. I'm a big, stocky guy. You know, he's a pretty small guy.
Mm.
But he's also a karate champion.
Yeah.
And if we had gone into a fight, he would have fucking murdered me. He would have killed me in 2 seconds. And, like, I'm squaring up to him. I'm like, we're about to have a scrap over a leap card. And then suddenly everyone's getting in, like, tearing us apart. And I don't know what happened. I just saw red. Like, I just saw red. I wanted to kill this guy because he was being annoying. He wouldn't put the leap card back, even though I asked him to. And once I asked him to, he said no. He couldn't go back on. He wasn't going to put it back. And I wasn't going to pick it up. And then it just exploded. Even to the point where, like, a couple of weeks later after a show, Phil pulled me aside and was like, oh, is everything all right? Like, I heard you and Clong had a fight. I just want to make sure that there's nothing going on in the gym. And which is great to see that, like, if everything goes wrong, that Phil's there to kind of step in.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Phil, I lost my cool. Like, I was like, we had a stupid argument over a leap card. It was never going to turn into anything. Like, it was my fault. And he was like, all right, grand. Like, just wanted to make sure everything was all right. And then that was, like, that was it. Fair play to Phil for actually showing some concern. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I lost my cool because Clong picked up my leap card, the bastard.
Well, I could not think of a better way to finish the Up to Tuck podcast. I've been Dom Tuck. This has been Owen Richards. Owen, thank you so much for coming on. This has been an absolute blast. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a million. And thanks to everyone that listened to me ramble and talk shy for 2 hours or whatever it was. I really appreciate it. And hopefully everyone is staying safe. And we will see you all sooner rather than later. I do miss everyone.